I want to talk about sex today. And in order to make sense of this, it's vital to understand that the Jews had a drastically different view of bodiliness or sexuality than the Greco-Roman society had. For the Jews, to be a human being was simply to be a body person. You could not be a person if you were not a physical person. For the Greeks, however, they split this thing up into two parts: the material part and the immaterial part. So you had the spiritual part, the soul, and the material part, the body, which was always denigrated. This goes back to Plato. It was a deeply influenced Augustine, who was, of course, the great towering genius of the first three centuries, four centuries of the Christian movement. And Augustine himself had been a Platonist and a Manichaean. And the Manichaeans put it very simply: the body is evil. Simply, full stop. The body is evil. Only the soul, the spiritual part, is good. And I bring this up because Paul talked about fornication today, and all of us, I think, at least in my experience, have grown up under the shadow of a drastically distorted view of human sexuality mediated by the church. If you don't believe me, listen to this from St. John Chrysostom. Only after the banishment from paradise did the question of sex arise. Adam and Eve lost their virginity once they became disobedient. Before that, children were born through God's creative act, since our first parents had the nature of angels. Think about that. And of course, Augustine would famously say that when husband and wife were to go to bed to have sex, ut cum dolore descenda, that was sadness. They fall on the marital bed to do this nasty, dirty thing, which is to have intercourse. I grew up being told by my mother and by the nuns who taught me that simply to have a body was questionable, if not evil, if downright evil. And I've heard enough confessions in my life to know that that was not an unusual circumstance. Let me read you another remarkable passage from this great book. This is written by an Irish priest. I've been teaching moral theology as well as philosophy and scripture in Dublin since 1955. At the intervals since 1960, I taught moral theology and spirituality to international renewal groups of priests, nuns, brothers in Europe and Africa, Asia, etc., etc. For the past 50 years, I've heard confessions and given spiritual direction in 12 countries of widely different languages and culture. What I most remember from all of this is the enormity of the harm done to Catholics by what we now realize was a spiritual abuse practiced unknowingly by the church for centuries. After several hours in the confessional on Saturday night, I came out on the verge of tears, thinking, what in God's name have we done with people's consciences? One of the great blessings of my life was that I seem to have missed the fear and scrupulosity that marked the lives of so many people, both grown-ups and into adult years. From infancy, my God was the loving God of infinite compassion, who smiled on his creation, one who did not have to close his eyes or turn his back when I took a bath or discovered that I was a sexual being, convinced that the female human body is the most beautiful of all God's wondrous creations. I sat through many hellfire sermons and retreats and listened to all the warnings, but they never bothered me seriously, although they reminded me that I could mess up my life and hurt people by not keeping close to God. Hellfire was certainly in the background, but I never thought that large numbers of people, if indeed anybody, would be punished in that way. So Paul's addressing a group of Greek speakers in Corinth, and it's been said by some Pauline scholars that if the Corinthians could misunderstand anything that Paul said, they would. And so you had this profound ambiguity among the citizens of Corinth. The one thing that everybody shared was this notion that the body is something totally disgusting. But the responses to that split into two drastically different directions. One said, well, since the body doesn't make any difference, we can do whatever we want with the body, and that's fine. The other group said, no, since the body is disgusting, I don't want to have anything to do with the body. The passage right before this line from Corinthians, it said, it's good for a man not to touch a woman. Paul didn't say that. That's the Corinthian bias against sexuality. And I know very well what this priest said when he sat in confession Saturday afternoon and evening and listened to all this pathology. It circulated most around the question of sexuality. In the seminary, I was taught as official moral theology that in every other area of life, of violence or hatred or malice of whatever kind, the only area of life where everything was seriously sinful had to do with sex. You think about sex as gravely evil. So what's Paul's concern here? Well, he's trying to talk to these loopy people in Corinth about the nature of human relationships. The problem with fornication was not simply some kind of sexual abuse. It was a deeper issue of human infidelity to other people that they made promises to. It was a whole different register than sexuality. I bring this up because we're going to have a baptism at Brescia today, and I had a wedding on New Year's Eve, and it occurred to me again how we've messed this up so gravely. Marriage is the only sacrament where the people who marry each other are the agents, are the ministers of the sacrament. The priest does not marry people, although we talk that way all the time. The priest is there only because of some legalities where you witness these people saying, yes, I take you, I take you. Which means, therefore, that sexual activity between husband and wife is a sacrament itself, is a means of grace. This is so drastically different from the view of sexuality that I grew up with, not just in my home or in my school as a little kid, but in my seminary as well. We were absolutely counseled to be asexual beings. And the more you think about that, the more horrific are the consequences. If you are grown up, if you grow up being told that who you are essentially, quite apart from any of your willing or thinking, is to be disgusting. Something terrible has been done to us. Something terrible has been done to us. Where we cannot see two mature human beings giving themselves sexually to each other as an act in which Jesus is present, the action of God is going on, we're in big trouble. And we are in big trouble. And so far as I can see, this has not been notably changed. I mean, if you want to get into trouble with the Vatican, mention anything about sex, the ordination of women, imperfect men, as we know. Homosexuality, gravely, objectively disordered life. What have we done to ourselves? Paul was not anti-body. Paul was not anti-woman. Paul was not anti-sex. Paul was a good Jew, knew that sex was a gift of God, and was aware that sexual activity was itself a means of grace. I think today that because we talk about sexual liberation, I think wherever we find radical kind of recklessness in regard to sex is because the church has posited this contrary view of sexuality, which somehow people know is not right. Because we have no healthy teaching about sexuality, then, as with the Corinthians, anything goes. Anything goes. So I'd like to finish with another. This is from that remarkable book that some of you about the Underground Cathedral. With a passage that he approvingly quotes from the German poet Rainer Maria Rilke. Why, if guilt or sin had to be invented because of the inner tension of the spirit, why did they not attach it to some other part of the body? Why did they let it fall on that part, waiting until it dissolved in our pure source and poisoned and muddied it? Why have they made our sex homeless instead of making it the place for the festival of our competency? Why do we not belong to God from this point? My sex is not directed only toward posterity. It is the secret of my own life. It is only because it may not occupy the central place there that so many people have thrust it to the edge and thereby lost their balance.